Linda, so I'm ready to go.
All right, we are live tonight.
Okay, do we need to wait a minute for people to join, or is there anyone in the waiting room?
We don't run with a waiting room, so one's waiting. They haven't joined yet.
Okay. In that case, I will now call to order the Planning Commission work session for Monday, November 2nd, 2020. It's 5:32 p.m. We're meeting via Zoom pursuant to the governor's and mayor's emergency orders. And as usual, we start with the planning director's update. So go ahead, Dustin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have no QJR matters on tonight, but we do have just a couple updates. Included in your packet was a work plan, which we'll discuss later, as well as a notice of this was a QJR appeal of the co-housing project, which will now go on before City Council next Monday. The materials and the grounds for that appeal are up on the website. We'd like to just give you notice of that as to just give a heads up on actions. And I think Mark might have had a question on it as well.
I don't know that I had a question. I'm not surprised that it was appealed, but I don't know. I just was wondering what the grounds of the appeal were versus the pretty clear and objective standards that we had to deal with and whether that's something we want to talk about or not.
But I would caution us against talking about it because there's an outside chance it would come back to the Planning Commission.
How would that happen, Jennifer?
If they decided to remand it?
You think the City Council could remand it?
City Council could remand it.
They could. I don't think that will happen, but I don't know that we want to.
Okay.
Fair enough. I've never seen that, but in any case, I just wanted to ask if Mark had received the assignments of error document, since that kind of explains, you know, what they believe their grounds to be.
Yeah, and that's public information.
Right. So
although we may not want to discuss it now, it is available generally to the public, and it is essentially will be part of the record. So not only could City Council remand to you, the city actually has the opportunity to, if it went to LUBA, those assignments can also be, city can choose whether it wanted it to come back to Planning Commission from LUBA upon remand. So LUBA remands it to the city. The city itself can choose what venue does it want to start it in. So that's just another option. That was a law change. So
just as a matter of practice, you know, in 10 years, I've never seen either of those happen, and I've seen plenty of remands, so they're extremely rare. But in any case, all I'm asking is, I received a copy of the assignments of error. I just want to make sure everyone else has seen those. And from Mark's question, I suspect that he may not have seen it.
No, so I have an appeal hearing notice, which is 2 pages long, and that's it, right? That's what you sent out?
The way that it works is that when you appeal, you send out a notice like that, and the body of it will come later. You know, when they have the hearing next Monday, that's when they make their case. They're not required to make their case in that notice.
Gotcha.
There is an appeal.
We posted a notice to up on the website, as well as the assignments of error. Sorry, I think we were talking at the same time. As well as the grounds and the appellant's and applicant's responses up now. So you have the opportunity to go on our website, and I can send a link to that for you all to get all. We had 500 or 700 pages now of materials?
678, but I'm not counting.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought everyone had seen that. That's what I was asking.
So the short answer is that it's all under packet number 2 for the November 9th City Council meeting on the meetings page on the website. But if there are individual pieces of it that you want me to send, I'm happy to do that. Just shoot me an email and let me know.
All right. So all good. Thank you.
Concerning Dustin, concerning your report, I have two questions for you. Number one, I see the minutes are continuing to come in, and it looks like we're starting to get closer to caught up on it. But in the meantime, I had a look at the ORS, and my understanding is that we're not required to do minutes if we make recordings available. So is it possible that you can take advantage of that to catch up in some way?
Well, we have the audio up already. There is a request. There's still request and custom to do minutes. Whether that changes, we could look into that, whether they assume to change that. But we have taken the opportunity to post the audio to make sure that we have some at least presence out there in accessibility of the proceedings. So what we do have to do now is we don't have audio for much of this. Our Zoom format has allowed us to go pretty seamlessly into audio. We do need to still do some analog minutes to get caught up, but I believe this is going to get us for the most part into 2020, which we already have minutes, a bunch of the minutes approved and posted for 2020. Due to Zoom.
Okay. And my second question is, at our last meeting, we had also said that we were going to, at this meeting, discuss how to get someone else to be running the meetings, since I am probably off of the Planning Commission relatively soon. And I wanted to point out that right now the Planning Commission meetings and the County Commission Board of Commissioner meetings are often at the same time. And so I've been doing our meetings instead of the Board of Commissioner meetings for the last couple of weeks. But assuming that I actually am elected tomorrow, I feel like I need to attend the county meetings to get up to speed. So I may not be at all of the remaining meetings for this year, or I may not be able to stay for the entire length of the meeting, depending on the timing of the meeting. So we need to figure out how to resolve that.
So in, I believe it was 2019, and actually as we launched some of our legislative matters, and we haven't found it, Sue was elected vice chair because we expected a couple matters that for building height as well as fee and lieu. At that time, Mr. Chair, I think you were concerned about bias or conflict of interest due to employment status. So Sue is vice chair right now.
Do you remember that, Sue? We can't hear you, Sue.
I didn't think I was ever elected vice chair. I think I stepped in one meeting because no one did, and then it was just happened. Yeah,
my recollection is that we agreed that Sue was going to run the meetings if I couldn't, but there was no actual election of a vice chair.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ceremonial in any amount, but
the point is, say that the next meeting I'm not available, someone has to run the meeting. So I don't know that you can resolve that today, but I guess the question I would ask is who's interested in doing that? And if no one's interested in doing that, you're going to have to draw straws or something, because you do need someone to run the meeting. It is a requirement. So I suppose Tina's not here. You can assign Tina that job, but you should at least we need to know if anyone is interested in playing that role, so that can be enacted at a future meeting.
And if it makes it any of a sweeter offer, we will not have a QJR meeting next time. So I mean, you have at least that going for you on the first pass.
I guess what I point out is also I can, for whatever meetings I'm in for the rest of the year, I can sit in on the meeting as a member instead of running the meeting, and sort of act as backup or to offer advice or anything like that. So if someone wants to get a hand at trying it out, that might be a good mechanism also. As a matter of law, I mean, someone has to be officially chair because someone has to sign the documents. So at a minimum, someone has to be available who can sign things and who can call the meeting to order and call on people to run the meeting. So, yeah.
What about approaching it in that we rule out some people?
You
so can we can make a short list just as the newest member. as the newest member, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing it. Give me a few years and maybe, but I personally wouldn't feel comfortable doing it yet.
Okay, so Erica, step back. We see how fast all the rest of you step back, and then we'll know where we are. I'm not saying that we need to decide this today, but
right.
You know, it is a serious. It requires serious consideration, probably by next meeting. So let me just throw that out there, and if anyone
I'm happy
has
to nominate
on that.
I'm sorry, Erica. Are you nominating somebody?
Yeah, I'm happy to nominate someone.
Okay. I guess what I suggest is let's make it a firm agenda item for next meeting. And before that meeting, people should let Dustin or me know that you would be interested in it. Otherwise, it's going to be just who can step back the fastest.
I'll record your nominations ahead of time.
Yeah.
Great. So, anything else, Dustin?
No, I'll share the link to the appeal documents, and then I'll be available for discussion regarding chair assignments and nominations to be posted on the 16th.
Right. For vocabulary reasons, I think I'm not sure how many folks here have dealt with appeals. Dustin, can you explain the concept of assignment of error?
Yeah, so as we go through our this review, as we go through and we review based upon criteria, so assignments of error come in two forms. They come through in the way of a compliance with a standard. So an assignment of error is basically an appellant's position that we have failed to either address a criteria or we've failed to process a procedural assignment of error. Process the application in an inappropriate manner. So we missed a procedural step, such as notice requirements or some sort of procedural error during the hearing. And so they can assign, those can be assigned as well. So our job in an appeal essentially becomes hearing those matters and either remedying them or making a decision based upon, at this point, the record and what's been provided, either that they're affirmed, rejected, or accepted, and then we act accordingly, be it a remand, be it we try to do some sort of corrective measures so that we address those assignments of error. The appeal can come from an applicant. It can come from any party of record. So anyone who's really participated has an opportunity or standing, if you will, to raise their objections. Typically, this is why we have our long preamble of the meeting. The chair recites kind of the ground rules and the places where applicants and appellants and parties will what they'll do is they'll preserve their case. So they'll make the statement of why we erred known, and then they have the opportunity to bring it up later if they believe it hasn't been addressed. Is that a fair summary of appeal?
That is. And the only thing I'll add is in talking to a lot of attorneys about a lot of cases, there's generally the requirement, the ethical requirement for an attorney that they make any argument that is conceivable. I'm not sure, I forget what the exact word is, but often they make arguments that are not particularly strong, but they are obligated to make all of the arguments as opposed to just the best arguments. So as laymen looking at these things, you'll look at this list and say, oh my God, how could they possibly make that argument? And some of them will be very remote and some of them be, oh yeah, I guess I can see their point. When you read it, recognize that all of the arguments are not of equal caliber. And frequently there's really one central thing in there and a whole bunch of things they put in just because, you know, they don't want to be caught in malpractice for not having made an argument. So anyway, should we move on?
And, Yeah, and that does go into the preservation. If you part of preserving those arguments is raising them. So at any point in the process, if you want to go back and argue those, even if they're weak, if you don't raise them, you do lose that. It's the raise it or waive it. You either raise it or you lose your opportunity to argue about it. So oftentimes you want to preserve your appeal grounds in as many ways as possible. So,
and often those arguments that you make can then be manipulated into making a broader argument if an issue is later discovered that you want to try to squeeze in that wasn't really made below. It's a common practice to figure out how to say, well, we kind of really did make it. You just didn't understand it when we made it because we said this. And I can give you half a dozen examples of that. And sometimes Luba falls for it, sometimes they don't. But anyway, so that's all the wisdom I have to share there. It's a fascinating process. So I really encourage you to watch the city council meeting on Monday. If it goes to Luba, watch, keep track of the Luba proceedings, just so you understand the practical aspect of how the work we do gets, goes down the road and eventually either gets upheld or modified. Very fascinating process.
I want to point out that the packet includes a memo from Dan Cairns with responses to each of the appeal items, which I think is really instructive reading. So I would recommend that for everyone.
Good point. Yeah, I didn't realize that we had the response menu or the response memo already.
That is.
Any staff report has to be published 7 days in advance of the hearing. So that happened today.
Great. Thank you.
So many of these documents are very, very fresh. I also consider this a good learning opportunity. It kind of serves as a, both an opportunity to take scrutiny and analyze the code, to scrutinize our own actions and our own findings. And I think it will help, it'll help the commission as well understand, some of this is not just trying to understand the rules that are in effect, but how they're applied and how robust and or the level of detail sometimes it takes to make sure that we have defensible findings. And that's our goal. When we come to you, we want to present defensible findings. And when you make decisions and deliberate and make findings and make decisions, they need to be backed by defensible findings. So this actually, in some ways helps, again, just audit and strengthen your idea of what is a defensible finding and where can things be scrutinized. So
in different words, if you read the document where the attorneys argue what we got wrong, you'll have a much better understanding of the work that staff does to defend against their expectation that people will attempt to make those arguments in the future. So it's sort of reverse engineering the whole thing. Let's get on into our item number three, which is our priority city project ideas for 2021. So we're continuing the discussion that we started at the last meeting. What I notice is that we have two different documents to work from. Dustin has kindly prepared a draft. Is that what you'd call it, Dustin?
You could call it a draft.
Okay. And Bill Irving emailed to all of us today a list of his priorities, which I think overlap in some way, but also deal with some of the issues that we discussed at the last meeting that I don't think made it fully into Dustin's document. So Dustin, would you like to start by reviewing your document, or how do you, Arthur, you think that's the reasonable way to approach? Yeah, go ahead.
There was also an email from Tina that came in with an addition to this from her trees committee meeting.
I'm not sure I remember that. Let me take a quick look. Thanks for pointing that out. That didn't come in today, did it?
That was back on the 20th, October 20th.
I did read it.
Just so we include that.
So I can do a screen share.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I did not read it. I see two documents from her. One thing, she's not coming. So I never read that. Okay. Significant trees on private property. Got it. Okay. Okay. Thank you for bringing that up. So Dustin, go ahead.
Yeah. So just so you know, trees on private property may come before city council on the possibly the 23rd. So not to shortcut Tina's list, but there will be some project management, and that will be presented. So we'll have some action and discussion before council on that right away. So that you are all welcome to add it to your list, but we're a little behind the curve on that one. So
great.
So on my list, I can bring up the memo that I drafted for you all as a share, if you want to start with that. Just a project list.
Does everyone have that available on their computer? It's sometimes easier to follow along on your own copy of it, so we can actually see each other. In terms of running the meeting, that's easier for me if I can actually see you guys.
This is Mark. I have it up on my.
Yeah, I have it too.
Is everyone good with that?
Can I?
Sounds like.
Oh, yes.
I can read from it as well.
I like seeing
Erica.
Oh, Erica likes to see it.
Erica wants to see it, so let's see it. Go ahead, let's see it.
Okay. Are we seeing a PDF document?
Yep, we are.
Housing needs analysis. Okay. So this is what I assembled from discussion. As mentioned, I think Bill has some overlapping issues on this, but I think one included changing R2 to 2,500 square feet. So this is the list that I compiled based on what I took away from as your input, including a safe routes added to this TSP, citywide analysis of parking, advanced acquisition and planning for Henderson Creek, trail development. And then I simply took the strategies from the housing needs analysis as excerpts from-
Oh, you said, it says except though.
Oh, except. That is the excerpt.
These were exceptions, not excerpts.
Oh no, this is very- These are, this is a draft. So this would be these elements that have not necessarily been acted upon. Falling under strategy one, which I think that's what Bill was referring to, is how do you make more efficient use of UGB land? So the first page starts off with the issue itself and then gets into particular action items. So That's kind of where we move from. Action 1.1 is a generalized changing the colors on the map. And some of that came through in the West Side project area that we did not dive into at this point, but it is targeted map changes and underlying zone changes. Some of that, again, has been worked on. It may not be a discrete project, but it is an action item, so I didn't want to immediately filter it from the list. Action 1.3, this shows up on Bill's list, the reduction of R1 lot sizes to 5,000 square feet. Action 1.4, this is a standard size residential move from 5,000 square feet to between 4 and 2,500 as a new minimum lot size. Then we get into revising the ADU ordinance as currently drafted, the development of a cottage code, which I'm working on right now as a part of the middle housing code, the revision of manufactured standards, revision and methodology for building heights, and analyzing how we look at building and how we measure it, and the analysis of the building height for multifamily structures as well as commercial zone properties. So that's the quick list of excerpts of projects. And we could probably go through it one by one. And we're gonna be taking notes on how you prioritize those.
Could I jump in and kind of give you kind of why I thought the way I did? So I kind of looked at all that.
I'm going to call on you next, so go ahead.
Yeah, I looked at all that list, and I felt like there was, I think my points in my list overlap with pretty much all of those things, but I just thought about it organizationally a little bit differently. So, you know, one, I think we talked about, and I don't, you know, we should have the rest of the commission as a support of this, but I'd love to see, you know, we've got 12 months and pick 12 meeting dates and outline how many days we're going to spend on each one, or how many meetings we think we need to spend on each topic. And then just, I guess, to my budget, my point number two is if we've got a March 15th calendar scheduled for examining building height methodology, then we need some resource from a staff perspective for, you know, probably a couple of weeks before that to look at what's done, best practice type work, look at our existing code, and come up with some alternatives for us to discuss at the meeting. So that's my point number two. So let's get the calendar. Let's figure out from a staff time how much we need to support that, whether it's staff or consultants or whatever resource we need. And then my kind of third point bullet is here.
Could you hold it, Bill? Could you hold it 1 second? So my understanding from the last discussion we had, we were trying to make the point, and I think that's what your point number two is trying to say, that we have serious problems with that because of the current staffing level, we're not able to make significant, we're not able to make progress on a lot of these issues at the pace that we think is appropriate. So we're asking City Council to take a serious look at the staffing levels because of the fact that we've been working on this for several years without, without being able to, I'm not gonna say we're not getting things done, but we haven't yet moved the needle on housing. And if that's your number one priority, we have a list of things we need to get done. We're doing them at a very slow pace. If you want to bump up the pace, let's do something about it. That's kind of what I know I said at the last meeting. I think you said that.
Yes.
And that's what I took from your point number two.
Yes. But I also think the way that we can work backwards from it is if we establish some schedule, you know, for these legislative hearings. I mean, we've known we need to be dealing with building heights for 5 years. We have had, you know, in this last 12-month cycle, there's been 6 times where we didn't have a legislative hearing. Why didn't we have a legislative hearing? Because we didn't have a calendar and we didn't have resources applied to it. Does that make sense? Saying what you said.
It completely makes sense to me. Yeah. Anyone else want to jump in?
Okay. So on the legislative hearing side of things, the way I was thinking of it, and I think some of these are going to be more than one meeting, and maybe we, and that maybe there's other things that we put down here for, you know, if we had our dream list of what are our 12 meetings, but this is where I was starting with. These are 4 that make sense to me. And some of these are probably more than one meeting. I'm calling the missing middle housing type, the work that Dustin's doing. And, you know, I think that I haven't seen it, but it seems like it's meatier than one meeting. But, you know, well, I guess no one would get into it. The next two, I really feel like are, I feel like if we get ourselves ankle deep into, you know, citywide parking analysis, we'll again be challenged to get anything done. We can argue about, you know, downtown business districts and mixed use and commercial this and all this other stuff. But I think if we try and limit the scope to the residential side of things, I think it's pretty straightforward that we could say, you know, per dwelling unit less than 800 square feet, we only need 1 parking space instead of 2. Or we can say per dwelling unit less than 800 square feet, we need 0. I mean, I think we should have that kind of discussion. And I honestly think in one meeting, we could make some groundwork, at least on the residential parking side of things. And I think some of that is important as we start to think about stuff that comes later on, because then we'll have already had the parking discussion and we won't be burdening some of our other discussions with that. And then I guess my same commentary would be on the building height measurement methodology. Like if we figure out what that actually means and how we do it, then we can jump into say, you know, when we talk about the missing middle housing types, there's going to be height standards in there. And we already know that we feel like we need to make a modification there. So I feel like those two, parking and the building height, they're pretty critical to get done to support all the other work. And then the last
one. And Bill, Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were done. Yep.
Well, the last one, I kind of organized it a little bit different where they said, you know, the HNA strategies had R1 is, you know, 1.4, revise R1 is 1.4, revise R.2 is, you know, 1.7 or whatever it is. I think we could go in and look at our existing ordinances. We could take all this missing middle housing type that we're going to get here, and we could parameterize it. And we can say, okay, and I think this would be easy enough that we just look at our development standards for R1 and make a proposal and have public comment on it. Do we need 7,000 square feet, you know, or not? Or should we make it 5-4, you know, in R1, what should our development standards be? Should it be a 5,000 square foot lot? Should we have a 28 or 35 foot high building height? What should our lot coverage be? How many dwelling units do we put on there? I mean, I feel like we could have this organized like by parameters and march through maybe what's three or four things in the HNA strategies and just organize it a little bit differently by development standard by zone.
No. So Bill, but you bring it in that bullet point though, you brought in the concept of floor area ratio and looking at some measure of intensity of usage. So can you address that?
Well, right now we say R1 on a 5,000 on a 7,000 square foot lot, you can do one dwelling unit. And I guess this is probably where, you know, the first part of, you know, lot minimum, lot size, building height, lot coverage, those are all modifications of parameters that we are familiar with now. The comment I would make is that I think when we see Dustin's commentary, what our current parameters are leading us to do is to build the biggest thing you can on a single lot, the biggest single thing that you can on a single lot. And I think if we looked at it a little bit differently and said, on an R1 lot, you can have 3,000 square feet of use, for example, intensity of use. That means you could have, you know, 3,000 square feet of heated buildable area, or, you know, we have to decide what other things that would include, but that would be a different way of looking at it. Instead of saying on an R1 lot, you get one dwelling, on an R1 lot, you get 3,000 square feet of buildable area. On an R2 lot, you get 4,000 square feet of buildable area. So as we increase our residential zones, we get to a higher intensity of use on those lots. And that
The shorthand for that, Bill, is that to date, our current code regulates the number of doors, not the intensity of use. And you're talking about introducing the intensity of use into our code, either as an alternative to the number of doors or as an adjunct to the number of doors.
Yes. And so, yeah, so it would give the development community the opportunity, instead of building a 4,000 square foot house, to build, you know, two 2,000 square foot houses, for example.
Right. And so the problem I have with the way that Dustin did it by simply citing the text of the housing needs analysis is that it kind of locks us into the thinking of the consultant that we hired to write that report, which was, you know, somewhat narrow, and there's been a long time since then. So I think the thinking has matured and broadened on it. So I think I personally believe that it's important to get those clear points that Bill has added. I'd like to see those added into the recommendations that we make.
And Bill, I have a question. Is this a sequence in the order in which you think we should look at it? Or do you think the building heights and parking things should be looked at first? Or do you have a sequence in mind?
I guess my comment is it seems like number one, we could, you know, at some point falling out of this priority list and getting council's feedback, maybe staff proposes a calendar to us and we say, looks great, let's shuffle it around a little bit. I mean, I think number one, I think we could have a meeting on number one, and maybe it's not a long one, but that might be worthwhile for us to have a meeting on number one. when I get into this next stuff, I put missing middle housing stuff at the front because I understood that that's what Dustin and council has resourced and is ready to be heard. I put some of the other stuff later because I don't think we've done the prep work for those items yet.
Okay.
And then I did organize them thinking that maybe we should tackle my fourth bullet after we've talked about a couple of the other things, because I feel like if we jumped in and started talking about my fourth bullet, we'd just start talking about parking or something. So I did put parking towards the front so we could at least have the discussion, say, oh, we already decided that, and then rely.
You mean when you talk about parking, you mean the philosophical discussion about parking is up front, and the details will work their way into all of those zones as you change them?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's the
underlying philosophy, and then there's the specifics of, you know, how does that apply to R1? How does it apply to R2? How does it apply to intensity of usage? You know, what are the linkages between all the things? But there's a fundamental question of, you know, we currently have a 1950s style of thinking embedded in our code when you look at the parking stuff, and you're suggesting less prescriptive parking and more based on intensity.
Yes. But I was also trying to not get us into the citywide parking revision, you know, do one project that solves everything, because I have a fear we'll never get that done. So
you're talking residentially.
Wanted to limit it to residential and say, realistically, what do we think for a multifamily apartment? How many spaces we need? Or have a conversation that says, how many spaces do we really need for a 600 square foot living unit? Do we need two parking spaces for a 600 square foot living unit? Yes or no? I mean, so I think it is a little bit of a philosophical discussion. Yes.
Great. So let's get people to weigh in on how they feel about the priorities. So thank you for asking that question, Sue. So I guess I'll start with you. Is this, you know, first, do you agree with all these issues, and or is this roughly, or you place them in, or do you have a different thought?
I definitely agree with all the issues. I do want to ask Justin about, is that accurate that you're working on the missing middle housing? And I guess we've defined that as cottage housing and other things. I guess I want a definition of that to be sure. And when you say you're working on it, I'm not really sure what you're putting together exactly. So what that looks like.
Putting together a code update. As far as missing middle housing at this point, it's going to refer to duplexes, triplexes, and cottage housing.
So, and you have a contractor working on this, right?
Yeah, as long, me as well. And so we have.
I think Sue may have missed that meeting where you told us about what the contractor was doing.
Yeah, we have contract support with architect to help audit this, and they've been working on the House Bill 2001 as well to help make sure that we have some alignment with the state code and some industry trends on how our other municipalities have worked on this. And we're also working with that as well. So like municipalities, lessons learned. It's not going to be the first generation of this code written. We're definitely, and I'm looking for where has this code been written and then needed to be amended because it overregulated it. Examples of, I like the second generation rule sets that I'm looking at. And so that's what we're doing now. And we'll hopefully, I'm hoping to prep that and have it before you in the next month for first. I'm waiting on pictures. So the idea that the form and the outcome is a little more known. So that's
great.
En route.
So Sue, your turn on, are you generally agreement on this, the priorities now that you understand what they are?
Yeah, mostly because I think Bill made a good case for his opinion on this, and I agree with that, the idea that building height and parking, at least philosophically, will get those issues discussed first, but then the nitty-gritty of how we actually apply them to each of the zones would be the last step, I guess. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. I'm gonna go down the order I see you on my screen. So Mark, you are in my upper right-hand corner.
Yep. No, so I like, so if I'm reading this right, working with
Dustin's note. We have the Safe Schools, Safe Routes to Schools Network. We have the citywide parking, and then we have Henderson Creek. And then I see the four bullet points from Bill Irving, and I see, you know, the citywide parking overlaps. But I think that's a good priority list.
Well, citywide parking doesn't overlap, right? Because Bill wants to keep it to residential.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So just go to the residential. So I agree with that update. So basically Bill's list plus Henderson Creek and Safe Routes for School seems to be a good list of priorities in my mind. That makes sense?
Could you repeat the last, I'm sorry.
Oh, looking at Bill's list, the four bullet points, I agree with those. And then I would add from Dustin's, the Safe Routes to Schools and the Henderson Creek Trail.
Okay. And where would you put those on the list? It doesn't matter that much, but.
My only issue with this Henderson thing is that I see land being sold right around Henderson Creek. And I feel like if we put that off until the end of next year, it just we would have lost the window of opportunity to make that actually happen. So that would be my only reason for trying to get that up on the list of priority, but obviously all these other things are important.
Okay, great, thanks. Megan, you're next. You're my middle left on my screen.
Right, I agree with what everybody has said. I'll add, in terms of the parking philosophical discussion, I don't see citywide versus residential as mutually exclusive. Why aren't we talking about citywide residential?
I'm sorry, could you explain that? So you're talking because you're saying because residential housing can exist in the commercial zone?
Right.
Okay.
Specifically the second floor housing above retail. And then I don't know what the ODOT Safe Routes to School grant schedule is, but I am guessing that one could come later in the year.
So thanks. Bill, do you care to respond to, Megan's made a clear point, a good point about the fact that our expectation is to see significant housing, residential housing in the commercial zone. Were you intending to accept that from your proposal for discussing, for having that philosophical discussion of residential parking requirements? In other words, are you planning that for only the R zones or for any place, just focusing on the residential uses, but any place where residential uses are allowed?
I hadn't really thought about it terribly far. I just didn't want to get stuck into like some two-year project. So I was trying to do something tactically that says for a 400 square foot, you know, X, how many cars do we really need, if any? And I think we could probably have that discussion if it's detached, attached, and depending on where it's located, because we might have a different opinion on some of those things. Like if it's above, you know, we might say, well, if it's a 400 square foot unit on second floor downtown, we might have a different opinion than if it's a 400 square foot unit in a cottage development off of, you know, Belmont or something.
So I'm going to take that as an agreement with Megan. I don't see any space between what you said and what she said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's an excellent point.
I think I agree that examining it residentially makes sense.
Great. And Erica, you are my lower left. I think that's the Paul Lind Square on the Hollywood Squares.
Just finding my unmute button.
Yeah, we hear you now.
Yeah, I would agree with the group with the two lists.
Okay. And you don't have anything in particular to add?
No.
You don't have any objections? No. Great. Yeah, no. I think you come last, you know, by the time five of us have gone, it makes it nice and easy.
Yeah.
Great. So, I think that's some pretty good direction for staff in terms of rewriting this memo so that there's a clearer priority and a little more focus on some of those issues. Dustin, are you following? Do you have any questions? Do you feel that the instruction is adequate here?
Yeah, I just I put this together as kind of a catch-all list to drive discussion. So it sounds like we have a more refined list with some sidebars on it. I can put that together on your behalf. It would be nice to know, it sounded like do you want it a prioritized list or just happy to tag on to that? I heard mention of Henderson with a sense of urgency. If there are those that you want me to move to the top, that weren't necessarily, Bill kind of had methodology and
I got that. Yeah.
But where those fit would be nice to know.
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, my own view on that is I would put Henderson is urgent but lowest priority, if that makes any sense. In other words, it's time critical. So I understand that. But in terms of its importance in the scheme of things, I think it's quite low or significantly lower in my book. But in terms of if you're going to do a work plan, if you don't do it now, he's right, you could lose it. So yeah, I don't know how you reconcile that, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for some of these things like building heights, like Bill says, they've been floating around for a long time. It'd be great to get that out of the way, right? So it seems like Missing Middle is underway. Dustin's got the project going on. As soon as we're ready to get that reviewed, let's do it. Building heights seems like a priority. It should be something we could get off our list, right? So I agree with the sentiment that there's other important things here that could finally be knocked off.
Or maybe, I'm sorry, Mark, can I just throw something at you and get your reaction? It feels to me like what's necessary in Henderson Creek is acquisition. It's not a planning commission job. What if this, you know, it's described here as if there's significant work for the planning commission to do to, in some way, you know, specify Henderson Creek, but really how much, you know, didn't we really do that in the West Side planning process already?
Well, but I think the issue is, right, is that, what is it, chapter 5, help me out, chapter 15, what was the reference we referenced last time and time before?
Goal 5.
What?
Goal 5 resource.
A goal 5 resource, yep. Right? So without it becoming a goal 5 resource, then no matter what the West Side report says, it's not going to make a determination of how people use that land, right? So I agree. I mean, I don't know if it's our problem or somebody else's problem, I'm hearing of rumors of different pieces of land being purchased by the city around the city. and I'm like, well, if we want to do a Henderson Creek trail, there's land being sold around Henderson Creek today. You know, where is it on the priority list? That's my current thinking.
And if you do get into a goal 5 analysis of the particular feature, it's a comprehensive planning effort. So it certainly comes right in your wheelhouse. So if it's just a matter of acquisition, that's really more of kind of an implementation measure. But
nobody would do acquisition unless it was goal 5 or something close to, right?
No. Yeah, I think it's separate issues.
Yeah, you could just outright purchase. The goal 5 is a little more of an analysis and some regulatory sidebars that, in terms of protection measures. And there's a kind of trade-off analysis that we do. Refer to as the easy analysis, to where we look at different uses. Does the environmental outweigh the economic? And it you go through this trade-off process, and in the end, through that, the resource is designated, and then there's regulations that are placed around it. That's not the only route to get to a Henderson Creek project. There is
The city can acquire property. The Goal 5 process basically takes the property off the map, effectively. It places regulatory hurdles on the development so that even if you own it, you will have strict limitations on your development. And frankly, that, you know, it becomes a big legal
right, and that might delay the thing issue. Going for a goal five might delay it for 30 years, right? So maybe having it on the TSP is a better move, but nevertheless, I'm still wondering how we can get it codified so that the land.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you, Mark.
Yeah,
I'm going through this in my head, just trying to think of what the best tactics are here to what the best strategy and tactics are to actually get there, and I'm struggling. I'm not telling you you're wrong. I'm trying to understand it.
Mm-hmm. I think there's still a worthy request. If you think Henderson Creek Trail implementation or protection is a worthwhile project, I don't think it's fully separated from Planning Commission as a body. Mm-hmm. There may be an implementation strategy that you all think this is an important element to future development of the city. It's worth taking a look at. It may not necessarily just fall in Planning Commission's lap to execute. I mean, there could, you know, it may just generate some momentum elsewhere where it becomes a discussion and a project. Kind of like the trees on private property. That is sort of in Planning Commission's realm, yet we have kind of another aspect of the city looking at that and analyzing it right now. So
yeah, and goal five analysis, the last time we did that was concerning the waterfront area and the different zones down there. I don't think Planning Commission was involved in that at all. I think that was done the consultants and city council. So, there's certainly different ways to do that. Great, so let's keep moving. Two questions I wanna put out there. Number one is, so at the last meeting, I mean, I know I was making the point, and I'm not sure, maybe it's just a point I'm making that I'm not of general agreement, but that we should give a clearer message to the city council that in their budgetary actions this year, let me put it differently, Rachel and Will start to cook the budget in December, January, right? So as soon as the city council finishes setting their priorities, they start cooking the budget. And if there's going to be resources put into the planning department, it would be as a result of actions that happen in the next month or two. It's not something that could follow if you establish a calendar, but you take a couple of months, you know, and say January 1st, you have a calendar in place. By then, it may be too late to make the budgetary request for staffing to meet that calendar. So given that we can point to the fact that over the past years, we've repeatedly stated that these housing issues are number one in priority, and yet we've been repeatedly unable to get enough staff bandwidth to work on the legislative issues instead of on the quasi-judicial issues, that we are making a strong recommendation to City Council that they do something about that. So is that just me, or do folks generally agree with that concept?
I agree, Arthur. I would like to see, sorry to use her name, but Annika's position filled again. I miss her, even though I don't see her. And I know
I see her on Indian Creek Trail, so.
And I know staff has to miss her, or that position. And then I would like to see more attention to the legislative issues.
Anyone else want to jump in on that?
Yeah, I concur there too. Yeah.
Okay.
I guess I have two comments. First is, Arthur, we probably shouldn't talk about cooking the budget. It sounds too much like cooking the books. It just doesn't sit well.
I didn't even think about that. Sorry.
Creating the budget.
The budget. I think it's like baking a cake is what I was thinking.
Yeah. Okay. No, you don't do that with money.
Good point.
But the second thing is, Justin, I would just like to have confirmation, I guess, from your side to know that we are accurate in stating that the reason we haven't had gotten to these legislative issues is because your staff truly doesn't have time to do the research and supply us with the materials we need to help make, you know, to address these issues. I mean, is Arthur right about
that?
Good question.
Good question.
Yeah, we certainly have resource issue. I mean, you know, I don't have to go into that.
Okay.
Yeah. More resources equal more output.
Yeah.
I think that is, So in what I wrote up for you in the first paragraph, I tried to summarize this in kind of a single, sentence or two. And I could read it back to you if it's kind of to your sentiment. Again, I'm gonna have to rewrite this, but it says, aside from the unique projects, Planning Commission would like to emphasize that in order for any measurable or meaningful progress to be made, needed resources for planning are required to handle not only current planning and application requests, but comprehensive and legislative planning efforts. That was kind of my one synopsis and recital of what I tried to gather from you all. So
I guess what I will admit is that I didn't even see that in there, maybe because it's at the end. So I guess my observation would be, I would put that front and center.
It's the end of the first paragraph.
I would put it front and center and say, if you want to see anything out of this, you need some resources here. And now here's what we think we should be working on. But Bill, we haven't heard from you. And Eric, I'm sorry, did you weigh in on that? I think Bill and Eric have to weigh in.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure out what I should be weighing in on, because I heard Arthur saying that if we wait to figure out the calendar before we tell them that we need resources, then they're going to have budgeted for the year. So I do think getting ahead of it, and just that's why I put it front and center, is like, you know, let's do 12 legislative hearings next year. Staff can tell us right now, for every legislative hearing, how much prep does that take you? You need one staff member for 40 hours to prep for a legislative hearing. I don't know. Like, figure that out. Let's work backwards from there. And if we want 12 legislative hearings, some number falls out the bottom of man hours to support it. And it's an estimate, but it's at least it's doing some budgeting that council could plan to.
And just as I agree with the calendar analysis. Really, the budget comes more from the project list. Like, if you want to work on these projects, here's the resources that become necessary to do that. And then, so not waiting for a calendar, but having the project list go forward, if you want to execute this in a 12-month calendar period, here's what it's going to take. I think that's kind of where, that's how the budget process will look. So having your list in there with some emphasis acknowledging that is not harmful, but it certainly, I agree with you that it needs to predate a calendar.
Right.
Yeah. My list is, you know, sorry for folks, but it's really exclusively housing focused, because I'm over us talking about housing, and we've talked about it for 5 years and I'm still waiting for us to do it. So I feel like the message that Arthur kind of stated earlier, and I think, you know, we could beat council over the head with this, is like, look, guys, you know, put up or shut up. We've talked about housing for 5 years. Why don't you just give us the resources so we don't have to talk about it for another 5 years? Let's make...
You need to go to the meeting and say that.
Let's make 2021 the year that we actually do it, right? So, yes, I could go to that meeting.
I mean, that's the perfect way to say it. You know,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Put up or shut up, make 2021 the year that we actually do this instead of talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Erica?
Sorry, I have to hit all the right buttons. I missed part of that conversation. The baby was screaming.
So. Oh, no problem.
I haven't heard anything objectionable.
Okay, just to summarize, you know, Bill said it really well at the very end of his comment, which is basically telling that we should tell the city council that this is, and the phrase he uses, put up or shut up, 2021 should be the year that we act on these housing issues rather than just talk about them
yes.
some more.
Yes, yes.
Great.
He should good. So, go to the meeting and be impassioned.
Yes, and Bill, that's it, exactly. Right? So and Bill's going to make that argument for us. let me throw out one thing which we haven't discussed yet, which I've talked to Dustin about, but not to anybody else, which is the food pods concept. For many years, it's been clear that the city has a problem in how it views seasonal versus temporary uses. and this is becoming more and more of an issue. And I've been approached by people who are seriously concerned about this, and Dustin's been having to deal with this. So I would like to suggest or throw out for consideration this issue as something that we need to start raising in the public consciousness, maybe not solve it this year, but start some discussion on it to start the public process of figuring out, you know, especially as we're in COVID times where there are more and more carts, where there are property owners who are looking at putting pods on their property to do food cart courts, which I guess they say pod because it's easier than saying food cart court. But it's definitely, we have, again, we have code that was developed in a different era. And there's a lot of modern thinking on how you regulate these things. And Dustin showed me some good examples or referred to some good examples. So I'd like to throw it out there. I know that you haven't thought about this, but is that something that we can at least tuck in at the end of our list so that it's starting to gain some currency in the public discussion? So let's, who wants to jump in?
I would be all in favor. I think that's Erica, a great idea, especially great, with the pandemic.
You. Great, Erica. Anyone else?
I'm in favor. It's at the bottom of the list, so you're saying, right?
Unless someone wants to change it, I'm suggesting putting it at the bottom of the list because it hasn't been discussed at all, and it takes a while for these things to ferment. If I could say to bubble to because I can't say cook. So it takes a while for these things to ferment and get ready to actually happen. So I'm suggesting let's start to slide it into position so that in the year or 2 years, it's kind of in the pole position.
Is that really a planning commission item?
I believe so.
Well, apparently we have some code around it, right?
So you have two active codes. Currently, you have a transient merchant, which is a licensing issue.
Yeah.
This is Title V.
Title V, and that lasts for all uses that occur within 6 months or less, or seating or tables. You go 6 months, 1 day, and or request to install seating or tables in association with your food cart, you end up in a land use matter. So that immediately goes into site plan approval and title setting. Yeah. So there's one or the other. And there's not a whole lot of margin between those two things. It's really
And other cities have more creative ways of doing it that creates a spectrum of different possible solutions for someone attempting to do that, attempting to do a 9 month or 12 month, cart based restaurant service.
It is something we'll be working on. So it's not going to go from, you know, right now it's kind of coming for trending from off the radar onto the scene, accelerated very much by the pandemic, as well as some of the business responses this year. Again, it's a worthwhile request if you want to put it on there. It's starting to show up in its sense of urgency and the fact that we haven't dealt with it actively. Whether it changes the rules or not, it's becoming more of a discussion item.
Just so you folks have some understanding of the issue, so the 6 month line is kind of an oddity where we call it a transient merchant, and yet it's the same people year after year. So really, it's a seasonal merchant, not a transient merchant. It's not a temporary use; it's a seasonal use. But our code doesn't have any distinction between those. There's some real questions philosophically about how the city wants to deal with it, and it will have an impact on what our downtown looks like. I have my own opinions on what I'd like to see, but I'm not even going to throw those out now. I'm just going to say that you can get very different looking downtown depending on what decisions you make on this, and our code leaves it in this funny area where, well, I mean, we have a good example of Okwate. He's, you know, a really smart guy. He came up with a solution that he has two identical carts that he puts out, and then after 6 months, he moves one out and moves the other one in, and you probably never noticed it. because they're identical. But he meets the transient merchant requirement because of that. And you know, I love his food, and I think the guy's really great. So I'm not complaining about that, but recognize that that's kind of an example. When you see things like that, that suggests that you might want your code to be a little more modernized so that you can actually achieve some policy goals with it. So I think, Megan, you said you're okay with that, and Erica said you're okay with that.
Yeah.
Did I put words in your mouth, Erica? I'm not sure. Yeah, you did say, I'm sorry, Megan, you did say something, right?
Yeah, I agree with it, because I've seen some, Portland's a lot bigger than us, but they, yeah, I think, were the first city that I saw really embrace the whole idea of food truck courts. And then I was just in Fort Collins and saw a pretty, it was like semi-permanent sort of container food trucks that had like a whole winter garden thing going on around it, where it was just as active during the winter as it is during the summer. And that would really help out restaurants right now. I've always thought that Hood River was a great winter, could be a great winter destination.
Great. Dustin, I think with Gresham that you were using, that you said had a pretty robust set of regulations in this area.
Yeah, Gresham had stepped it up. And then you see Happy Valley also kind of trending out in front with a lot of more permanent amenities. Surrounded by food carts. So that'd be your pavilion, your permanent structure, but placed to allow for a mix of pods and uses to come and go. So it starts to become a little more less transient with movable, replaceable merchants. So it's just a shift in industry thinking away from, even further away from where Portland was, is Portland's carts. You keep the wheels on them, they're transient. This is more of starting to blend those, you know, those concepts. So the industry is just starting to really change and mature, or change.
And over the last 7-8 years, I've seen two people seriously attempting to do this and kind of giving up for regulatory reasons. So we've lost the major opportunities in this area, you know, maybe for the better or maybe for the worse, but you know, again, that just, so it sounds like we're okay. Everyone's okay with adding this as the last item on our list.
Yep. Sounds good.
Yeah. Bill, any objections?
Yep. I agree. I have one other thing that I think would be worth adding is I get asked this question at least twice a week as a real estate broker, and it's related to tiny houses. I mean, so, you know, our code is pretty archaic in the definition. I mean, we've got manufactured home defined. We've got mobile home defined. I'm not quite sure where we're allowed to do manufactured and mobile homes. There's something that requires them to be multi-segment and greater than 1,000 square feet to be placed anywhere in the city. So I think we could put a topic down towards the bottom of our list that would be, you know, the world is changing related to housing size that people want, as well as what the standards are for site built versus off site built dwellings. So I think we can somewhere down there to code update related to, you know, modular manufactured and tiny house.
Modular manufactured tiny house. Should we add that to the end of our list also? Any objections?
No objections, but put it at the bottom, I think.
Mark, you started to say something.
No, I was going to say you could also throw the word prefabricated. So, yeah.
Prefab, yeah. That's a good one. It runs into a bunch of building code issues, so we can't kind of solve that, but seems like we should look at it from a zoning perspective.
Mm-hmm. At least look at what best practices are and consider, at least keep track of who's had a good solution in this area that might be something for us to aspire to.
So in the list, we talk about manufactured homes. This is action 1.8. It kind of runs with this. It refers to manufactured park standards, but it kind of runs along with that. Are you just looking for the units themselves or the zoning code and where this would apply? So I guess I'm trying to just,
My comment was a little bit more holistically in the world is evolving to, you know, prefab, and we've got mobile in our definition sections. We've got manufactured home as a concept. We've got mobile home as a concept. We've got manufactured dwelling parks as a concept. And then I know there's some place that says, you know, in an R1 lot, if you want to put something that's not site built, I don't know if that's a manufactured home or not, but it's got to be greater than 1,000 square feet. It's got to be multiple segments. It's got to be. So I'm thinking probably the answer to your question is yes, both.
Yeah. So, there's a statement in here that says, identify the barrier. That would be a barrier. You know, I think that's one of your barriers to manufactured or different type of housing product as compared to stick built. And consider revisions to remove barriers for manufactured or other housing or other modular or other production methods. I think that's kind of where I was going through that.
We had a planning commissioner, Casey Weeks, who left probably, I think before any of you, but Bill, who wanted to go and do that after he left being planning commissioner and kind of gave up for regulatory reasons also.
Okay, that goes below Food Cart and below Henderson Creek.
Opinions?
Yep, thumbs up.
Okay.
Sue, it sounds like you have, I saw a little grimace there, so what would your order be?
It seems more related to the whole let's focus on residential issues that Bill was talking about earlier and moving that as a priority. But despite that, no, I agree. It's keep it at the bottom of the list. Okay. That was my grimace. I was thinking, wait a minute.
You were thinking, that was your brain working. Yeah, yeah, my brain does the same thing.
What I'm trying to figure out is if Dustin produces this, you know, code, we get a cottage housing code and people want to have the cottages be 500 square foot, you know, prefabs. I don't know that we can do it with our current zoning ordinance. That's where I'm kind of stuck.
So it may wind up.
You might need to join into that. Right.
Into one of the other issues. Yeah.
I mean, I think we just said Mark, I'm sorry. But I think there's an issue there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We may need to join those together. And I think it would come with the cottage housing might force us to investigate the prefab thing at the same time.
So Mark, are you suggesting that we should change our proposal, our document here, or just you're just noting that in the future we may determine that need to connect them?
I think in the future we may need to connect them. I agree with that point. Yeah.
Great.
And as I write through them, I'll our collective reminder, on applicability and standards, we will have the opportunity to have that addressed. So if you keep that in your mind regarding middle housing and products, you know, we do have the opportunity to hone that in and make that statement that prefabricated structures, so long as they comply with the following standards, will be permitted. That is, we will have that opportunity. So just keep that in your psyche too as we discuss this.
Okay, so can you explain, Dustin, this list, you're going to edit now based on what you heard today, and then will it come back to us, or am I to be authorized to present it to the City Council, or is this something that's presented in writing, or what happens? What happens next?
I'm going to write it up, and I'll send it out to you. I'll ask you all to individually respond back to me so that we don't have to have another meeting.
Okay.
Don't respond to all, so we unintentionally don't have a meeting. So I'm trying to take your gather your sentiment and its refinements, and then I'll produce something in writing for your individual reviews.
And then how do we approve that? Do we need to?
Comments and changes, and then, you know, if it's...
You'll wrap it up. You're saying you'll wrap it up.
Yeah. But if there is some radical departures on expectations, I will probably ask somehow to reconcile those with you all. For your general harmony, I will take it. I'll take it. So.
So in terms of speaking before the city council, can we agree to nominate Bill to make that statement that he made concerning the need to put up or shut up? In other words, if that's our position, we should authorize him to speak for us on that.
Good.
Are there any objections to that?
No.
Bill, are you going to object?
No, that's fine. I mean, I have one opinion, but it's great to know that that's a consensus opinion of the Planning Commission, and I'm approved to voice it. Yes, I agree, Arthur.
Precisely. I just want to make it, you obviously, any of you are welcome to come to the City Council meeting to speak at a City Council meeting, but if Bill, who is not the chair, is going to be representing what the Planning Commission believes, he should be authorized. So I'm going to take it that we have consensus on that, unless someone wants to speak up now. Okay. So is there anything else on this issue? Dustin, do you think we've given you everything you need?
Got what I needed. Thank you all for taking the time to look through this and put together a wish. So
great. Let me just look at the agenda. We have minutes we need to approve.
That's it. We have a list.
Sorry, Bill, were you trying to get something else in, or was that background?
I'd love to get to the point of instead of Dustin's 3-page memo, I'd like to get to the 1-page memo with a little bit more bullet and less fluff, so people's eyes don't get glazed over when they start reading the H&A.
Oh yeah, that was only there to spur your conversation. I had no intent of reciting that in 3 pages. That was more of not omitting something and to keep things moving. I definitely expect this to be executive length.
Good.
Okay, great. Okay, so next is we have a request for a motion to approve minutes from 7 meetings from July 15th, 2019 through December 16th, 2019. So would someone like to make that motion?
My only laugh was I don't remember saying that the Hood River taxes are too low. I think what I was trying to say is that the proportionate share of funds that goes to Parks and Rec are lower than the proportionate share of taxes in other jurisdictions, other cities, other counties.
Well, I could swear I heard you say that we should double or triple our taxes. I remember you saying that.
I was looking at that going, wait, I don't exactly remember that. But
could you do me a favor and give me a quick advance notice of where that appears on the page number?
Okay, I will find that quickly.
Thank you.
So Mark, you need to first make a motion because we can't even discuss this until you make a motion. So I'm going to take it that Mark just made a motion and Sue is leaning forward, so she's seconding it, right?
Yes.
Okay, so Mark made a motion to approve those 7 minutes and Sue seconded it, so we're discussing it. Mark.
I will make a motion. Do I have to call out this one little thing?
No, you know, you've already made the motion. You're just... All you have to do is just to make the observation that you would like a specific change, and then I'll ask for approval with that change.
Hang on. Sorry, I just wanted to find that.
That's great.
Issue. I'm close. Sorry, guys. Dang.
You could just make the statement and then you could email Dustin later exactly where it is.
Yeah, we'll find it. I'll word search taxes and then I'll be able to find it. So
word search, Mark wants higher taxes.
So I make a motion to approve the bundle of meeting minutes in our packet that we received today. 43 pages of meeting minutes with one correction, which is to note that the reference to the city proportionate share of money spent for parks and recs, that was my intent, was to call out the proportionate share, not to say that the taxes are too low in the city.
Thank you. Do I have a second? You seconded that.
I second that.
So anything further? Seeing nothing, does anyone object to that motion? Seeing no objection, that motion passes by consensus. So thank you on that. Actually, you know what I would like before we end? We have Jennifer. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that your comment, Mark, is on the minutes from November 4th. It's on page 2.
Well, yeah, page 26 of 43.
Yeah, I found it. Page 26 of the 7 references of taxes in that packet. That is where I found it. So.
Right.
Okay. So if everyone's okay with this, we have Jennifer and we have Kevin here. I'm wondering if I would just like to ask them what their observation is concerning the priorities that we've been discussing and the emphasis that we've placed on things. If you have any observations to make based on what you heard, you guys sit in the background and listen to all of our meetings, and you know what we talk about, you know what we care about, we know what you care about. Do you have any comments to make?
I'll jump in real quickly. I appreciate that the commission recognized that there may be some resource issues that have resulted in some constraints. I think that will be helpful to move things forward. Thank you.
Okay, and Jennifer, are you still there or maybe not? Is that Jonathan?
Jennifer checked out. Now we just have Jonathan run the meeting. No.
Okay, I saw the city of Hood River. I thought that was Jennifer, but I guess that's Jonathan. Okay. Jonathan, do you have anything to add as long as you're here?
No, Chair. Thank you, though.
Okay. Great.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So going forward, if we have the meeting recorded and we're just posting that instead of written minutes, do they have to be approved somehow? Is there an approval process on recorded meetings?
I was wondering that myself. So ORS 192 is where this appears in the Oregon statute. And the situation used to be that there was the description of what was required in minutes, that minutes had to state at a minimum who was present, what the subjects were that were discussed, any motions that were made, who made the motion, who seconded the motion, and what the vote was on that motion. And at some point someone added in, or at some point the legislature added in that recordings of the meeting need to be made available to the public. I don't know where the approval process happens, but a recording
is what it is. Yeah.
It is what it is. Exactly. Right. So why would a recording need approval? So yeah. I thought that through and then I came up with the answer, and thanks for reminding me. It doesn't make sense to approve a recording because the recording is the recording, but minutes could be subjective. It could be errors. So you have a approval process to verify that.
Right.
But recognize, so our meetings are far more, our minutes are far more substantive than need to be, but it also makes it easier for someone who's, I know when I go back and look at a minute, I can say, oh, that's what they talked about. And it's really easy to get a quick view of it versus having to sit down with the recording. But from a legal point of view, the recordings, if someone wants to complain and say that the city hasn't done its job, the recordings are available. The city has done its job legally, but you're right, it could be easier to access. So anyway, next chair can deal with that. Just a reminder there, everybody. So if there's nothing else, any final comments? Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Nice.
Hi.
Hey,
Dustin.
Feel free to reach out when you have questions and nominations. I'll be ready. Erica, go ahead. Sorry.
Great. I was just going to say goodbye.
Oh, it was me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.